Question for you. Would you rather pay $150 a month or $15 a month to work out with the same high-quality gym equipment? At Planet Fitness, you can get top-tier equipment for $15 a month. Plus, save $28 or more when you join now during our Strong Choice Sale. Our weights weigh the same, you just don't pay the same. Enjoy free fitness training and 24-hour access at most clubs, all in the judgment-free zone. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month, cancel anytime. Deal ends October 10th. See club for details.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Tuesday, July 9th, 2024. On today's episode of the show, I'm going to present a conversation with Twister director Jan de Bont. Jan de Bont got his start as a cinematographer in the Netherlands, where he was born, and he worked with Paul Verhoeven on some of Verhoeven's pre-Hollywood projects. After he came to Hollywood himself, de Bont eventually shot movies like Cujo, All the Right Moves, Ruthless People, Flatliners, Basic Instinct, and action classics like Die Hard and The Hunt for Red October. I actually interviewed him back in 2018 for Die Hard's 30th anniversary, and we talked all about the making of that movie. I'm going to link to that in the show notes because it was a great conversation. I encourage fans of that movie to seek it out. There's one other notable movie that Jan shot when he was a cinematographer. It's called Roar, and it came out in 1981. If you've never heard about the production of that movie, it is worth taking a few minutes and reading about it because there were real lions involved, and something like 70 people were injured while making the film, including Jan, who was literally scalped while he was being attacked by a lion. Truly wild stuff there. Anyway, I'm telling you this because in the interview you're about to hear, I mentioned Roar, so I wanted everybody to be on the same page. In 1994, Jan got the chance to direct his first feature film, Speed, and his next movie was Twister, both of which featured uncredited rewrites by Joss Whedon, who Jan mentions during our conversation. We've spoken recently on this podcast about how great both Speed and Twister are, so I was psyched when I found out there would be an opportunity to get to speak with Jan about Twister to celebrate the new 4K disc and digital release of the movie, which are available as of today. Twister was the first movie to be released on DVD, so this is something of a full circle moment for the movie. And speaking of full circle moments, you'll hear at the end of this conversation that I asked Jan about the potential of him returning to the Speed franchise, since both Keanu Reeves and Sandra Bullock have both publicly expressed interest recently in coming back to play those roles again. Now, here is my conversation with Jan de Bont. Hi, Jan. How are you?
Hey, Ben. How are you doing?
I'm great. Thank you so much for taking the time. So I'd like to start out with a few questions about the lead up to Twister. I'm wondering if there was anything at all about working on the movie Roar, which was this incredibly dangerous production, that you were able to bring into your future work, making movies about characters who embrace dangerous situations of their own.
Kind of funny that you bring that up. I mean, that movie was a pretty big adventure to make as well, and dangerous as well, as you know. So I guess I'm drawn to things that are difficult and hard and not necessarily easy for actors to play in, as Twister was. So yeah, maybe. I never went that far back as you did, but I guess. Wow.
So on the technical side of things, I read that you had multiple cameras going pretty much at all times while directing Twister and Speed both. Having shot Hollywood action films like Die Hard and Lethal Weapon 3 that, to my knowledge, did not take that same multi-camera approach, I was wondering what made you want to do that when you got your shot to make your own blockbuster movies.
I mean, we used it a few times in Die Hard, but you're right, it was more like individual situations each time. Having worked with a lot of directors, I felt like there's always only one good take with actors, and that's really rarely, really hard to copy a second good version or to try to get a second. So I would like to really, especially in action where things are more than saying the lines, it's really responding. Your whole facial expression is important. Your whole body language is important. And that can only happen once, you know. Once you have to repeat it, then it becomes automatic. It becomes like you do that every day. And this is about not having to do that every day. Because these are one unique moments that really deserve all the attention. And also, to me, you have to try to get it all one take. I mean, we had a lot of one take situations. For instance, with with all the physical effects on the set, that's one take. You know, you cannot do that multiple times. It's like, that's it. Like the whole scene at the drive-in and to that place, everything is one take. And also the actors were in that too. That's the thing. So when you film those actors, when those things are happening, you have to do a wider shot and a close-up at the same time, because that's the reaction. That's the one that really makes it feel real. That really makes it like these people are really in danger and they really respond to that. They duck because something is flying at them, you know what I mean? And that's I always like that. And I always try to convince other directors I work with to use some directors, like, they think it's confusing for them because they cannot look at two things at once. And that's how most of them feel. And that's not how I feel at all. I know exactly what the other camera's going to see, yes, because I'm a director of photography myself. I know what it will be like. I know exactly what it will be like. And so I really made it like a little bit of a staple to really use in especially this type of movies, because I think it's super effective.
So when you're working that way, some actors like to, you know, maybe they produce their best work on take 7 or take 12 or something like that. Is that a conversation that you have with the actors in the hiring phase? So everybody's on the same page about like, hey, I'm only going to shoot a couple takes if that here, just so everybody knows what's going on.
Now that's a good question, but at the same time, this is not a regular movie. So in regular movies, they can be best at take 4 or whatever, or later take. And especially with one camera, that's when you do it again if you don't think you got it. But the problem is those actors don't have ever to respond to something as dramatic as happening to them. So, and that is only one time. You respond only once in that way. And when you see something flying at you and you really have to duck not to get hit, you cannot really do that again, because the next time you know it's coming and you're already ducking down before it's even there. So those moments to me are key, is that because that I think makes films like Speed and Twister so unique, is that you get those unique moments. And that's where so the actors are not actors anymore. They are reacting. And that is what we do in life. We react. We're not making big speeches and that you have to project. No, we react to all the things that are happening around us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I just rewatched Speed again the other day, and you just absolutely crushed that as a director. That movie is still so much fun to watch. I was wondering if you could take me back to the time when Speed was completed. I imagine you started getting a lot of different offers and things like that. Was Godzilla the first thing that really stood out to you? I know you put a lot of time into developing that.
Yeah, I mean, Godzilla to me and King Kong, these are the best actors you can have. And I mean, they're basically actors you cannot direct. I mean, physically, you cannot tell them what to do. They only react in post-production. but I love having to deal with having to make those things come alive. I love in especially the last Godzilla movie again. It was so great. I love that movie that won the awards, but I think it should have won for best movie in my opinion, because it was so well done. It was really, it had all the moments, it was right. Everything was right in that. And I thought that is rare, you know, and it's a gutsy thing to do, to want to do that, you know, as a director and as actors. And I think that with Tornadoes too, it's like, I really wanted to really confront the Tornado with my camera. Almost like I really wanted to put it right in his face and push the actor ahead of me. So that's really like a combination of like, not only the actor going towards and then getting all that stuff blown at them, but at the same time there is an urgency to it because I'm pushing them forward. It means there is a need to do that. Mm-hmm. And that is so great. That is, to me, it's like I think that you don't see that often in movies, that where you actors basically have to forget that they are actors. That's what you do.
I'm sorry. I was going to ask you about that. Like, one thing that I really love about both Speed and Twister is that the pacing in them is so fast. They really almost never give the audience a moment to breathe. And I was wondering when you signed on, if you had conversations with the writers about speeding things up even more than they might have been on the page in order to achieve that pacing that you were going for.
I mean, definitely. The thing is that we in both movies a lot are improvised because you see something taking place. Wait a second, that's how we have to do it. And then suddenly, oh shit, somebody has to say so. And then in that case was Joss Whedon, actually in both cases, in both movies, who he's so good at coming up with those. They're not really full sentences. They are responses that people would actually give, and so like a cow, not a cow. Those things are so hard to write. You really. So I had to explain it to him, and he said, and then he got it immediately, and he wrote it down like six words, basically. It's like really, and that's so good. And that was with Speed too, and also had. I always called him in the morning. And then even sometimes midway, he hated when I called him early in the morning because he's doesn't get up early. And said, I really need it. You have to do this with me. And okay. And then he called back a half hour later and just before shooting, and he come up with the sign like, "What button did you push, Bob, in the elevator?" Remember, like that totally made that scene, that one sentence. It was because it was so hilariously dumb almost, and so, it was so funny therefore, and that is great that you can do that. You have to. I don't want factual descriptions. I mean, the audience can see what I want them to see, and I don't have anybody to explain that on top of that. So I really want them to do things that are only related to the story and to the action itself. And I love, and but also I love things moving fast, I have to say. I always, it's to me, it's like, when you get drawn in the movie at that speed, you never give up. You really, it's so great. It's like basically, I want the audience to almost get a feeling that they were there when this all happened. So that's when you have a handheld camera and you, it is, I always feel that my position as a camera operator is the viewer in the theater because what they want to see this and but you have to pick the right things. You cannot just randomly move. No, you have to really use your own emotion, what you would want to see. And that works so well. It's much better than all these studied storyboarded movies, which are really, they become kind of stilted and stiff in its storytelling because they have all the storyboards and they have, so now they have to film them too, which is completely, some things, everything could be done in one shot. And some think it will be 30 shot or 40. It doesn't matter. You cannot really put yourself as a director in a place where you limit yourself. And it's, I mean, of course, studios don't like that. They like to see everything sorted out. Let me see the storyboards. And then quite often I have somebody make sure that I give them to them, but I never use them. And I only the only thing I use them for is to explain to special effects what I would like to see happen. But only that. I mean, not the timing, not the I want and that and actually special effects people love that, of course, but they like surprises too. I mean the teams that I have on both movies, they were the same team. They were so great and so inventive and made things so easy, like that attack on that garage with flying cars coming in. One take and one and then with and on the car on the cameras on the car flying in on the outside and immediately at the same time on the accident side, you cannot get that wrong. I mean, if you do it that way, but instead of most people that would film it separately, get it was in the action and now we're gonna film the actors and that's such a missed opportunity, I always feel.
Yeah. You mentioned the cow earlier, and I wanted to ask you about that. Was that moment in the script? What kind of iterations of the cow did you do before you arrived at the one that we see in the final movie?
It wasn't in the script at all. It was like I had seen a picture of a cow at the severe storm lab, and I asked, "Is this real? Is this fake?" I said, "Really, because it doesn't look real to me. How the hell can a complete cow still alive being the top of a tree. Except that's made up. Is it a Photoshop? No, that's real. Are you kidding me? I said, that's not that. And then I started to imagine how great it would be. And I think, what would this cow feel when he just lifted up from the sewer, eating some grass, and suddenly he's eating still in the air, turned around, flipped around, handed him the tree. And then a whole idea was so surreal to me. So I have to get that in the movie. And so that was the latest. So that came in only doing almost none to post-production, because we had it. It was one of the latest things we did. And so the visual effect, we had to create suddenly a cow for me, and a tumbling cow at that. And they had fun doing it. I loved it. They loved it too. And the actors liked it too. I mean, of course, they didn't see it for real, but they knew it was going to be there. So their performance, like, really dry. So it has to be, just feel as, react to it as if it's real. A cow. I mean, I would say, a goddamn cow. Another damn cow. I would, but they didn't say the damn cow, which is good. It's better than me doing it. So it was really funny to see them really responding in a way like that is almost too amazed to even think about it. They were just could only get the words out.
At your job, do you ever have to deal with a nose roller? How about a snub pulley? Well, if you're installing a new conveyor belt system, dealing with the different components can sound like you're speaking a foreign language. Luckily, you've got a team ready to help. Grainger's technical product specialists are fluent in maintenance, repair, and operations. So whenever you want to talk shop, just reach out. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Question for you. Would you rather pay $150 a month or $15 a month to work out with the same high-quality gym equipment? At Planet Fitness, you can get top-tier equipment for $15 a month. Plus, save $28 or more when you join now during our Strong Choice Sale. Our weights weigh the same, you just don't pay the same. Enjoy free fitness training and 24-hour access at most clubs, all in the judgment-free zone. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month, cancel anytime. Deal ends October 10th. See club for details.
There was a lot of publicity at the time about how tough Twister was to make, and I'm curious, like, looking back on the experience, do you have any regrets about the way that any of that stuff went down?
No, not at all. I mean, the thing is, you have to realize that you go with an enormous team, and there's enormous, I mean, so many tractor trails, all those trucks and equipment, into the middle of nowhere, into a meadow, which 2 days later is two inches under the water because of overnight rain, and everything gets stuck. And we had to get bulldozers to pull everything to go to the next. So I knew it was going to be really hard from the beginning. But at the same time, we kind of were a little bit like, you know, the whole team felt a little bit that they were doing some exploring in uncharted terrain. I mean, like, there was nothing there. There was no hotels. And no, they couldn't see anything, just a landscape. And that was kind of amazing thing to actually realize that. And they all started to really become their parks. If they wanted or not, they really heard that lingo all day long. And certainly that's all they spoke themselves amongst each other. It was so ridiculous to hear, because these were city actors and suddenly speak that lingo of storm chasers. That was really funny. And it was really hard for the crew. I mean, I have to say, for actors too, you know, and Helen especially, and to have those wind machines, I mean, like, whoa, really, really a big one, and it just aimed at you, and the special effect putting a lot of debris in it so it flies right in your face. It's really tough. You know, I tried it myself and I couldn't keep my eyes open. And of course, I mean, actors, they are trained, and they immediately, the first thing they're worried about is their hair. And of course the hair in 1 second is a mess. And the clothes are dirty, there's mud on it. And so it was really hard to convince them that it's okay. If it really looks bad, I won't use it. I will do another thing. but that's what you would look like, you know. It's not, this is actually what would happen. And it took a while for them to get used to it, I have to say, but ultimately they became like really team players. And maybe because we were all in the same boat, it was really tough for everyone.
Yeah. In the aftermath of Twister being finished, did you in the studio ever have any conversations about a possible sequel back then? And if so, do you remember what ideas may have been kicking around for that?
No, there was actually not right then, because the studio was totally shocked how well it did open, and it couldn't believe it. And it kept calling me, like, oh, there's an upgrade. And which, I mean, I was, of course, extremely happy with that too. But I saw it as a one-time movie. I didn't even think about a sequel. I mean, what would the sequel be? Even bigger tornadoes? Or you cannot get much bigger, you know? It's like, and so I don't know. And it came to pass, like 15 years later, there was a project written about Super F5 tornado. And then when it gets down to that, then I'm already starting to feel a little hesitant. Then becomes a little bit more like, too imaginary and too fanciful and too over the top. And this movie was not like that. It had to be much more real.
Yeah, I think I've got like 2 minutes left with you. I was wondering if you could tell me about overseeing the 4K version of this film. What was that experience like for you?
I think it was fantastic. I really was so looking forward to be able to do that, because in the first time, I mean, the DVD was the very first DVD was from Twister. And then now to have that, see that change, and I was able to do finally all the things that I had no time for during post-production with the visual effect, because they were just, that's, we had no more time, no more money. And so all the things that really didn't quite work, and maybe it's only me who saw all those issues, but now I could fix all those things that I didn't like. And because the key thing to me is the absolutely seamless quality between live action, special effects, and visual effects. They cannot be different. The one cannot stand out above the other. And once you achieve that, then the people look at the full image. And that, I think, is impressive. That's what I think they liked the most, that it was felt real, because they know what it feels, what it looks like when a car falls out of the sky, and they can see it's real. And so when they see that's real, then everything else becomes more real. So, but that is also the most expensive way to really achieve that. I mean, it's like we had such a massive crew of special effects people, but it's so paid off, you know, because I'm always convinced that you cannot make a movie only on visual effects. It has to be combination. Actors have to see what they're looking at, what they're reeling against, what they're afraid of. If you can't see that, it will be a big mistake.
Yeah. So real quick, I know that there was some talk from Sandra Bullock and Keanu Reeves about potentially coming back for a Speed 3. Would that be something you'd be interested in doing, coming out of retirement and directing that?
I have to say, I was really surprised that they got together, which is like, because so much has happened, their careers completely split apart, and he did some big series and became this whole different character. And they had a really good meeting, I heard, and they really liked each other again, which was great to hear for me. But I really wouldn't know yet what that would be. What would the sequel be to Speed? Because, I mean, the key thing is that it has a given time. It has to, absolutely cannot stop. There's a lot of things that making it to reach the final really, really difficult. And if those things, if you eliminate those big important elements, it would be really hard to achieve a single. Also, it had to be fast. It had to be moving fast.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Well, thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it.
Okay. You're welcome.
Take care. All right, that's going to do it for today's episode of the show. I hope you all enjoyed that conversation as much as I did. You can find much more about Twister and the upcoming Twisters at slashfilm.com. I will link to a couple things in the show notes as well. Slashfilm Daily is published every weekday, bringing you the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographical location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review this show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really does help us out a lot. Please tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you all tomorrow.
Question for you. Would you rather pay $150 a month or $15 a month to work out with the same high-quality gym equipment? At Planet Fitness, you can get top-tier equipment for $15 a month. Plus, save $28 or more when you join now during our Strong Choice Sale. Our weights weigh the same, you just don't pay the same. Enjoy free fitness training and 24-hour access at most clubs, all in the judgment-free zone. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month, cancel anytime. Deal ends October 10th. See club for details. Question for you.
Would you rather pay $150 a month or $15 a month to work out with the same high-quality gym equipment?
At Planet Fitness, you can get top-tier equipment for $15 a month. Plus, save $28 or more when you join now during our Strong Choice Sale. Our weights weigh the same, you just don't pay the same. Enjoy free fitness training and 24-hour access at most clubs, all in the judgment-free zone. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month, cancel anytime. Deal ends October 10th. See club for details.